Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hi, thanks for tuning in. This is the New Look Mum and Mama podcast brought to you by Golding Accountancy. If you ever need an accountant, we are golding.com. They're very nice and very good. So, this is the first episode of the New Look Mama podcast with just me on my own. Sadly, Harry's left us. Because she's just too busy. She's got too much going on. She's in too high demand for all the wonderful things that she does in her life. It's weird doing it on my own, but it's for the best. So yes, so thank you for tuning in. I've been talking to some really amazing people and I'm very excited for you to hear the stories and the conversations that I've been having. This week, the first episode is with the lovely Stuart. Stuart runs Haircuts for Homeless. You may, if you listen to podcasts, you may have heard him talk to Scroobius Pip on his podcast a couple of years ago because he started a charity called Haircuts for Homeless. Stuart is a hairdresser, obviously. He doesn't just go around cutting people's hair. that'd be terrible, wouldn't it? But yeah, he started a charity, Haircuts for Homeless, a few years ago now. And he was kind enough to come on and talk to me all about his life and why he started the charity and all the amazing things that he does, really. It was an absolute pleasure talking to him. He's a really, really lovely guy and we really hit it off. I really enjoyed our conversation. And off the back of it, I've booked another podcast with one of his previous guests as well, which I'll be doing soon. So yeah, it was all good in the hood, but check it out. I hope you enjoy it and I'll post all of the links to the charity, so if you want to help them you can. But yes, I'll see you on the other side.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Work. Hello! Today I'm joined by the very wonderful Stuart Roberts, who's the founder of Haircuts for Homeless. And also, you do a podcast as well, don't you?
I do, yeah.
Hear me, see me.
Hear me, see me podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
You're very welcome.
How are you?
I'm really good. I'm really good. I've done it. Just funny enough, this is all set up because I've done a chat this morning to a college.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, done like a Zoom with all the college students. Hairdressing, obviously, and we're talking about what we do.
Yeah,
I wasn't just hanging around.
Do you get approached? Do they approach you for stuff like that?
Yeah. It was an ex-volunteer, so she.
I told you I was going to get interrupted. Literally, we've just started the podcast. Before we started, I was like, I'm going to get interrupted at some point. Juno, come and say hello. This is Stuart. Wave. She can't hear you. She's designing a chocolate bar.
Oh, fantastic. My favourite thing.
It's very nice. I can't do this now, so please, could you? It's very nice. And then it's very good. I would like to eat it. But please now, just leave me alone for an hour, please. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah, so do you get asked a lot to do that?
Yeah, well, this is a new thing.
Okay.
I'm sure we can do a lot more of this.
Because
this is the thing with the pandemic and all this stuff. It's opened up. I mean, it's been absolutely horrendous, but it's opened up doors of other things. With the podcasting, it's made that so much more accessible.
Yep. Yeah, because I went on a podcast the other day and they were asking about, because we started this just before the pandemic.
Yep.
When it came out, I think, just as lockdown started. But they asked how it had been affected. But actually, it's been quite good because we've spoken to people that we never probably would have spoke to had it not been over Zoom.
Yeah.
So although it's nicer to do it in person, it does actually. And I suppose with you, you can give, you can be wherever you are in the world, can't you, and give a lecture online.
Yeah.
And you can do more in a day as well because you haven't got to travel.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And that's the thing. You can, I remember schlepping around at the beginning of it,
with
the gear and then, all that time to get an hour with someone. But now you can do a few back to back on one day, can't you?
Yeah. So there are some good things to come out of the end of the world.
Silver lining.
So have you always been a hairdresser? Did you do that from leaving school? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was, I think, a couple of months before my 16th birthday I started. And I'm the ripe old age of 59 in July.
Well, you look very good for 59. Not that 59's old, but...
podcast is sponsored by Oil of Ulay. To be honest, it's been, I still love doing it.
I'm
one of the lucky people in an industry. I've had some rough times, but I've been through two recessions. I lost my business 2 years ago, but I still love
the
essence of cutting hair.
Yeah.
I started Haircuts for Homeless, that first session, what that done, that reignited my love for what I did.
Yeah.
I was a bit punch drunk, 30 years of running a salon, high street, landlords, VAT.
Yeah.
I went back and I'd done that first session. And it's what hairdressers go into it for. It's people thing. It's connection. So I found that back. Yeah.
So, have you always? Where did you start out? Did you start out like local, or did you go to?
Yeah, you're local, weren't you? We're all local, but where?
Yeah. Well, I'm from Basildon.
Right.
But I'm in South Woodford now.
All right.
But I used to get drunk we're in Stamford, yeah?
I was, yeah.
I used to drink cider in the church graveyard in Stamford, because I went Grace Convent.
God, I used to love a convent, girl. Yeah. Oh, I used to love a convent. My first wife went to the convent.
Oh, I'll probably know her. And I was going to say to you, I'm sure that my friend started off in a shop in Stamford, but I don't know. Nicole Liddon, I mean, this would have been 30 years ago.
She could have done, yeah. I mean, to be honest, it's been such a long time. But like so many people, because it was quite, we've established for 30 years, so many people come and went.
Yeah.
that quite a few people, and sometimes I used to get like, at the beginning of it, I used to get, oh, my mum knows you, you know.
Yeah.
Think, oh, yeah. And towards the end of it, when this, you know, the last couple of years before it all finished, I'd get like, oh, my nan knows you.
Oh, fucking hell. So yeah. When did you start your first? So you've had, have you had two businesses?
I started a local salon, Lorenz Dore, in Stamford Hope. I was there for 5 years when I left school.
Yeah.
They made me a partner, but it was all a bit much, a bit too much too quick, and I wanted to do my own thing. So I just thought, I'm going to go and do my own thing. And temporarily, I went freelance, which wasn't a big thing then. This was, you know, I was 78, 83, I'd become a freelance hairdresser. So it was quite an unusual thing then. I thought I'd do it for a little while until I decided what I want to do, but I ended up doing it for 5 years. So I was sort of like, you know, in women's kitchens for 5 years, enjoying myself. And then I got divorced and bought a salon. I bought an empty unit in, me and my dad done it up, and that was in 1988, and that's when I opened the salon.
Yeah.
And that lasted for 30 years.
Wow.
Yeah, halfway through, we moved from Stamford to Corringham.
Right, okay,
I developed the I owned the freehold, so I developed it into two flats.
And then
I opened up one in Corringham Town Centre.
Yeah.
Much more central. And had a great time, you know, like, met some wonderful people, worked with some amazing people.
Yeah.
However, like 2018, it finished because the landlord doubled the rent. The business was already suffering and there was nowhere to go. Just had to broke my heart.
Yeah, I bet.
You know, I know it's a business thing, but when you've invested 30 years of your life in something...
It's a long time.
It was like a bereavement.
Why did he double the rent? Did he want you out so he could make flats or something?
Oh, no, because then it stayed empty for 10 months. You know, like, you can never... I've heard this so many times. I've met so many people in business in the last few years that there was no logic for landlords who just seemed to just double rents and...
Yeah.
And rather have a mentee than have some rent.
It just don't make sense, does it? No. Plus, you'd much rather, like, I rent, like, my home, and I work for a lady who rents her property, and it's like, you'd much rather have a good person in and keep them there and not put their rent up, just because you know that they'll look after the place, rather than jack the rent up.
Yeah.
You want to keep them in there because you want to keep it rented out, don't you?
It doesn't make sense. I mean, to be honest, the signs were, like, 5 years previous to that. It was really, you know, like, it probably was a time when it probably should have gone, but you cried, and you know, and I kept borrowing, you know, I even took out a second mortgage, which is all things I would tell anyone not to do. But when you're trying to hang on by your finger, you know, you do it. And it got so by the time he did that, I was overextended, but I thank God every day, you know, like, thank goodness for that landlord, because I would have been battling on now. And what it did, it freed me up to then give all my time to Haircuts for Homeless.
Yeah.
So these things, you know, whatever your beliefs are, these things are planned out sometimes. It's meant to be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sometimes you just need the push, don't you?
Give it time. Yeah. Universe do its thing.
So when did you start Haircuts for Homeless? Because you were on Pip's podcast, weren't you?
Yeah.
I listened to that, but that was a few years ago now.
It was, because Pip and I go back a long way. I mean, I cut his hair when he was a boy.
Were you Jenny's hairdresser then?
I still am, yeah. And the thing with Pip, this is why I've got such an admiration for him. I've said this before in something else. I've got so much admiration for him because I remember the boy who couldn't put two words together.
Yeah.
You know, and I've seen it, I saw him grow over the years, and, you know, I saw him sort of come back in when he was at college and he was doing his art and stuff. He come and done some photographs and things. And then when I first heard him doing his, like, his rapping and his poetry. I was just blown away because I remembered that kid, and then seeing that man do what he does, you know, is inspirational for anyone with that type of thing. You know, I love an underdog. I love a Rocky. You know, I love a Rocky story. You know, and that was a Rocky story, and that's what I've got. And he obviously, right? His podcast was it was new to me. I didn't know what the bloody hell it was, to be honest. But he said, "Oh, come on," and we went on, and Guy Lee, who was doing it with me at the time, we went on and chatted about it, and that probably was only a couple of years in. So we were still finding our way with it then.
So how did it come about?
It is relevant. Next month, I'm 15 years sober.
Wow.
Yeah. Part of recovery is you have to then go out. If you want to stay sober, you have to help other people stay sober, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Pay it forward and give it back, all that, you know.
It's not a
moral thing, it's a practical thing, you know, because you have to keep realizing what you are, you have to help someone else, you know. So it's like a practical thing, really. And I used to go every Monday to the local Sally Army, and we used to do this little like chat, a peer mentor group type thing, where we just talk to guys who are struggling with the alcohol or the drugs and that. And I happened to see at the time, this was 2014, I saw a guy in America, Mark Bustos, and he'd done these street makeovers. And it's a new thing then, I hadn't really seen it before. And he had got all the disheveled guys, and he'd sort of give a little slick look, and it was quite impactful. And I thought, next week, I'm going to, because I see the guys coming in the Sally Army and do the and get their food. I thought, I'm going to get me scissors next week, and I'm going to do some haircuts. That's all it was going to be. And that as I said earlier, that first day I did it, the connection and the gratitude and the fulfillment and the, I don't know, it just moved me so much that I thought, I'll do this every week. I'll come an hour earlier every week and I'm just going to do this. But really quickly, because I put a couple of pictures on, I checked with a guy, I said, you know, is it cool? And they actually quite liked it. They went, because they were so pleased. They said, put it on Facebook. I stuck a few on. And people were intrigued, you know. And I've got loads of mates who were hairdressers. I will come and help. And then they sort of, the Sally Army where I was doing it, they, like, Ilford said, can you come to us? And, you know, it really did sprout itself really quickly, you know. And that's when I thought, this is something that can be replicated. Because I'd found a way to do it that was safe. Because I could have gone out on the street and done it like a lot of people do, but doing it this way, I could actually make sure that volunteers were safe in a safe environment. And so pretty quickly I realised it could spread out. That was it, really.
Wow, so that was 6 years ago?
2014. We had an initial burst of it, and then to grow it, I was then having to knock on doors.
It
wasn't known, you know, so I got a lot of strange conversations, you know, with, like, I remember I was going to Brighton. Brighton was funny because we'd gone to Southend, the Harp Centre, which is an amazing place. And then for some reason I had to go to Brighton. I saw so many homeless people in Brighton.
Yeah.
I'll have to do it here. So I contacted a couple of places. And you would ring up and you'd say, look, you do the homeless people. And then you'd go, I want to come and cut hair. It was like, sorry. you know, if you're tired for business, they go, no, I'm really free. You know, because it weren't seen then. And it was really uphill struggle. And I was like knocking on doors, and then it was really funny. My ego runs away with me sometimes. And me and Lee, we went to set up. We arranged to do it at Brighton at the St. Anne's Day Centre, which we still do now, you know. I'd done how I used to do it was do a Facebook call, you know, hairdressers of Brighton, come and join us, all that type of deal.
Yeah.
And so we stayed the night in a hotel in Brighton, and I told the hotel, look, I'm having a meeting tomorrow. I might need, there'll be a lot of people coming. You need to, where can I have a room, sir? I said, I'm just going to lounge, you know, it's quiet. I said, yeah, look, you know, anyone comes, just show them through. You know, 11 o'clock, one hairdresser turned up. That's up. One hairdresser turned up. Oh, right, okay. But we went and we sorted it, we done it, and we grew it. And as I say, that's still running today, that place. And it's an amazing place. It was a hard struggle for 2 or 3 years. And that's when things like Pip, going on Pip's thing, you know, attraction, all of that stuff was all good at highlighting and getting a bit of, letting people know what we actually did. But when we got momentum, it was really an odd timing is funny sometimes, because I'd been approached by the National Lottery. We've got a small funding thing from them. And then because we'd had funding, they were doing something at the head office and they wanted a couple of people to speak. So I'd done this talk at Camelot, you know, and I didn't know, but at the time they were doing they were changing their PR people, or, you know, and the people who got the job were the people who make the John Lewis adverts. That company, I've got the name there, but they, you know, big advertising agency. And what their suggestion was that we need to, or Camelot or the lottery needed to focus more on the good that it does, all the good stuff, as opposed to the prizes. And they said, what you need is the guy who done that talk that day, get him in, or get him on the advert. And that's how, out of 500,000 projects they've supported over the years, we appeared on the advert. And it, you know, Nick Davis, who did the directed it, was an amazing guy, and they spent 2 days filming for 1 minute advert. And the day it went out was, it went out during the adverts of the X Factor on a Saturday night.
Wow.
And it came on, and basically what they did, they had 50 seconds of me and people cutting hair, all black and white, you know. And then at the end they said, the lottery does good, this is what the lottery gives you for good causes. So the whole focus was on us.
Yeah.
But that day was the day I had to close my salon.
No way!
And I had a bit of a mental
breakdown.
So,
if
you ever meet me and my sister, right? Me and my sister, like, are really close. She's been through all of the salon life. She's helped me run the salon for 30 years. She helps me run haircuts for homeless, you know. And she happened to be on holiday that week. But the landlord sort of forced me into a corner, because he said, all right, on Monday morning, I'm going to put a for sale sign up. And I hadn't told any, I knew it was coming. But I hadn't had a chance to tell my team. I'd worked with people for 30 years, clients. And I said, I found my sister on holiday and I said, like, he won't back down. He's going to put for sale sign above the salon. I checked my scissor.
Bastard.
I know, he was within his rights to do it. So rather than, I probably could have handled it better. But I didn't know what to do. So I thought, I thought, I've got to get them together at the end of the day on Saturday and say, look, I've got nowhere to go. We've got to close. And we, you know, I would have had a few weeks to get my mind around it. Because I was a bit nuts, I'd done this thing. Everyone went, it was really, really sad, you know.
Yeah. Some
didn't take it very well. And I understand that, because it was shock, you know. I was in shock. You know, and then what they, I'd done this thing, you know, like I'd done a little Facebook video and like of saying that it's all over, and I turned the lights off for the last time, you know, like this. I look now, and it's funny because it did help a lot of people. It didn't really help me, but it helped a lot of people. Because a lot of people in the industry, like, came, you know, private messaged me and said, look, we're going through the same thing. You know, we're that far away from this. But we're all in, you know, we're going through the same sort of problems. So the fact that someone who's quite established had gone through done it quite publicly. But so that was sort of 5 o'clock, 8 o'clock, my phone lit up.
So it
sort of lit up with all everyone responding to the sadness of the video. And then it lit up with, you know, and I couldn't cope. I had to turn it off. I turned my phone off. And then so that's really why we weren't in that position, you know, to cope with the success of it. Because I was, you know, but I've got to tell you though, Amy, that it took us a couple of months. There was a few more blows that came, but by Christmas I'd had it. I was done for.
Yeah.
Mentally, you know, I was in such a low place. And just after Christmas, I had to go to, I still carried on doing my homeless stuff, you know, because I had a responsibility. And I went off on a, I think it was just after Christmas, I went to Ipswich on my own. And it's a long drive. And I was really feeling sorry for myself. I was thinking, you know, at that point, I might lose my house, I might lose this. I've lost everything, I felt terrible. And then I cut this boy's hair. It was my son's age, about 22 at the time. And he lived in a tent. He told me the practicalities of living in a tent in winter. You know, the getting a bed early, zipping it all up, the condensation where you're breathing, the freezing, like literally freezing on the ceiling. And I drove away from there and I felt so grateful.
Yeah.
For everything, even at the worst time, I felt gratitude.
Yeah.
This is what this stuff does for you.
Yeah.
The gratitude you get from helping other people, it far outweighs any effort you have to put into it. And then, luckily enough, we got so much sort of positive stuff from that advert going out regularly on primetime TV, but we couldn't really action it because we was dealing with the aftermath of closing the business.
Yeah.
So brought it back out about Easter time the next year.
Okay. So
it had another lease of life, and by then we'd restructured and, you know, we got things in together and we'd become a registered charity. So then it really took off then. So we went from, like, in the space of the following year, we went from 300 volunteers to 600 volunteers.
Wow.
From 30 sites around the country to 60 sites around the country and the UK and Ireland, you know.
Yeah.
The whole of Britain we'd reached, and we've given over 40,000 haircuts. So that's in 6.5
Wow.
Yeah.
That's well, that's an amazing achievement, isn't it?
Right. Yeah. And then COVID hit.
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. So what's? I'm just going to shut my bedroom door because Juno's opened it, and the washing machine's on downstairs. Oh, joys of working from home. Yeah, so how badly then, obviously, have you been, I suppose you couldn't do anything, like all hairdressers shut, didn't they?
The rule of thumb with us is, even if there's technically ways we could, if the salons are open, we can operate. If the salons are shut, we can't. And that's generally how I sort of explain it to people. There are exceptions we possibly could within, but it wouldn't look good for the rest of the industry. This is the thing, it's that you've got to, we're part of a, you know, we are a big part of the industry, so we've got to be in solidarity with them in a way.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean to say that we stop everything. You know, we still care, we still do stuff. I've got team leaders who have done food runs. They've gathered stuff up, they've had donations, they've passed it out to people. We've kept in touch with people at, like, our volunteers. So there was lots of stuff to do.
What happened to the homeless shelters and stuff? Did they have to close or could they stay open?
Some did.
Yeah.
Some shut. Some Sue, who runs a Whitechapel mission, like, they are amazing. They kept trying to shut them down.
Really?
Yeah, because the mission was set up in years and years and years ago as a church mission. So it's registered as church. Well, churches had to close. So they'd get the buds from the local authority, or even the police would come and say, you can't open because you're not supposed to be open.
Yeah.
Now, Sue, bless her, would say, well, look, you tell me where they can go and eat and I'll send them there. I'll shut the kitchen and I'll send them.
Locally.
She said, well, I'm feeding them then. So you have to do what you want to do, but I'm not going to feed them if they can't.
Yeah.
And that's the attitude. Now, I'm not saying the ones who did close could have done. Sometimes they had too much going against them.
Yeah.
But a lot of them stayed open. Then they had the sort of myth that everyone was put in hotels, which to a degree was true, but not everyone. Not everyone was accommodated. And also, not everyone could cope with being put in a hotel.
Yes.
You know, there's so much mental health for people to be on the street that they literally cannot be inside, they are. They're not going to be in there for very long because they can't cope with it, you know. It's such a complex issue.
Yeah, it really, really, really is. It needs a whole infrastructure to be able to deal with all those kinds of problems, which isn't there.
No.
You know, so people have just got to do what they've got to do to, and she's right, you know, keeping it open to feed people because they're going to fucking die if they can't eat anyway, aren't they? You know, so it's...
Yeah.
It's such a hard...
It's a hard one. So we
hard one.
A lot of them were shut in. A lot were shut. Some carried on being open. We did what we could. But then the stop start didn't help last year because firstly they said, right, everyone's allowed out in July, I think. Well, that was fine. But our volunteers had not worked for 3 months. So we couldn't say, they was really busy for a few weeks. They were working 9 till 11 at night.
Getting
their customers done. So a lot of it was me and my sister going back out. Working with maybe a team leader who wasn't working in that way. Just getting them slowly started. But also we had to cope with PPE, health and safety, all stuff we didn't know about. So we had to slowly spread out again, knowing that we were doing it the right way and then spreading that out. So we had to restart again.
Yeah.
Then they closed us again and we had to then go again. And then I remember we had... We had so many to open in November last year. We had so many to start up, restart and open new ones.
Yeah.
And they shut us again for a month. So, and we just got going again in December and then they closed us again mid-December.
Yeah.
It's shut ever since. However, we've taken the time. Me and my sister have got a lot of admin to do to run this.
It's a business, isn't it? It's a business. A
big, small charity, yeah. So it's charities that have far bigger budgets than us.
Yeah.
we have to sort of make sure everything's done right. We've got trustees. We have to make sure the books balance. And
we
took the time to do that. The other thing that really helped me, because I have to get... You know, I ain't got the right head. This is why there's no coincidence that I've had to be sober for 15 years. There's things going on now. Work is one of my things that helps. And the podcast, so much because it's something else I could focus on. And it's something else that, and the spin-offs from that, like I had Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, came on mine. And
wow!
Yeah. She came on, and when I talked to her, we got chatting about stuff that she runs. I know there's people with opinions about the royal family, but I try and judge as I find, and she does an awful lot of good stuff. You know, she's a character. She is a character, but behind the scenes, they do an awful lot of good stuff. And there's Humanitas Charity, which is amazing stuff around the world. And also she's set up one called Sarah's Trust. So they partnered with us on some stuff, you know. And it would be little things like, which really helped in lockdown, where they had some, Sarah's Trust would get a load of soup delivered. So
yes,
can you get some soup out there? So I ended up, come home one day, and my wife said, there's a, what do you call them? Them big crate things.
Yeah.
A lorry's thing. There was a pallet.
Container.
So I ended up driving to Romford, to Brighton, to Manchester. I was like the soup man delivering.
Yeah.
At least I could do something, you know?
Yeah.
And then she gave out a load of kit bags, which was these sleeping bags with essentials in.
Wow.
Yeah, and I sent those, and I drove those to Bethnal Green. We gave some out to those. And
yeah.
It led to different things, you know.
And so when did you start the podcast?
Well, I'd been on Pips. Stu's one as well.
Yep.
Stu Whiffins. And I'd been on a couple of others. But I'd also, it made me realise that I had a story to tell, but I'd come across so many people, so many unsung heroes.
Yeah.
That, you know, it's great. I get some high profile, but I've also got the core people who sometimes no one would know about.
Yep.
And their story is so crucial. But also the idea was as well, Hear Me, See Me was all about name, because they say to me, thank you for talking to me.
Yeah.
They're not heard.
Yeah, yeah.
They say they feel invisible because people asked, you know. So it's that being heard and being seen is crucial. I will get more on there. Partly it was going to be the guys themselves.
Yes, yeah.
Their lives tend to be so chaotic that
I've
not managed to get it so far. It's been more the people who run the centres and people who volunteer.
Yeah.
My volunteers and my team leaders. So interspersed amongst people that people know, I also get these other people, and their stories are wonderful, you know, because there's always a reason why people want to help. When you dig the surface, find out that they've been through so much. And it's led to other things like, which I'm really passionate about, is domestic abuse. Having, you know, people close to me have been through it. It's such a powerful, emotive subject that it needs to be dealt with very delicately, but it needs to be dealt with and it needs to be shared, you know. And I did a week in the first lockdown where I'd done four in a week of people that have survived domestic violence. And one of them, particularly Jodie, I got her back on this year because when we went into this second lockdown,
yeah.
The thing is, it goes through the roof. Domestic violence is horrific. If you're then stuck in close environment
with
your perpetrator, it escalates, you know. And shit, her story is so, so brave. And I'd encourage anyone. It's not, it's not like trying
to. Yeah, no, I'll share it.
Yeah, Jodie Keegan's one this year. Her story is one so profound because we all know that there's a problem with people getting prosecuted for this stuff, but her perpetrator got 18 years in sentence.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. And her story, and she's so graphic. It takes some listening to. It took something for me because I've got this connection, because I've had it with someone who I love, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to listen to.
Yeah.
It's hard. You know, I've worked with, because everyone sees us do haircuts for homeless in the centres, but what they don't see is the stuff when we go to women's refuges, when we work with people with human trafficking and stuff like that. Because a lot of that is safe environment, so we can't publish that.
Yes,
They're the ones that we get such horrific stories of people, But it's almost like when we can do our best work, because
you
can make someone feel so much better about himself just with a haircut.
Yeah.
You know how you feel when you get when you get your roots done, love.
Yeah.
You get your trim up, and you feel lovely.
Yeah.
It's so lovely, that feeling. Times it by a million. When someone's been through that stuff. It's a powerful thing.
Yeah. But that's what you said. It must take a lot out of you, because if you're that kind of person that feels it, it's hard. And it's hard when you listen to someone, because you don't want to get too upset, because obviously they've been through it. Yeah. Do you know what you're saying? Is that really fine line God.
I was just saying, it's probably like being a nurse, you have to sort of slightly detect, I would think.
See, I couldn't. Like, I always thought I'd like to be a foster parent or be a social worker or do something like that where I can help people. But I just, I'm not strong enough, because I just get too upset all the time, and I couldn't deal with, I wouldn't be able to separate myself. Or I think if I could separate myself, then I wouldn't be able to do it. It's a hard one, isn't it, with social workers, because you've got to be quite, not dismissive, but I've had a friend has had an experience with it, and it's like they just want to get their job done at the end of the day, because I imagine that's a fucking hard job. They haven't got the funding, they haven't got the staff, and it is literally a case of they just need to do their job. But whereas that kind of job should be, everyone is dealt with on an individual basis, you know, it takes as long as it takes, but it's just, it's not possible to do it like that. So it's
the simple thing about that is it goes back to human beings. So you'll get some people who it will be a job. There's an essence of it that needs humanity that they've not naturally got.
Yeah.
But others will be a vocation, and they will thrive in it, you know. So you get good and bad hairdressers, you get good and bad nurses.
Yeah.
The people factor. You will never get a perfect balance when you're dealing with human beings, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine wanting to go into that kind of job if you haven't got that humanity. Do you know what I mean? Like,
you've met them. You've met the ones. We've all done it. We've all met them. We've all met the, you know, we've all met the doctor's receptionist. You think, you fucking hate people, love. Why are you on this? But you know, it's just one of those things. We're all flawed.
So how do you get your volunteers? Do people contact you, or have you got such a big base now that
it's the same thing that happened with contacting the centres? You know, initially we was, you know, Facebook, you know, come and join us, come.
Yeah.
The minute that TV advert hit, it was then we got flooded. You know, everyone joining. Any little bit of publicity we get an influx, you know.
Yeah.
My sister normally knows I've done something. Because she does all the emails, things she's done. The challenge has been last year is putting people off.
Yeah,
not had anywhere for them to come to, but we you know, she's great, my sister, Belinda. She's great. She does, you know, she's got everything. We're ready to go now. April 12th, we can get.
Yes, out. Yeah.
We're all ready to go. We've already booked up some sessions. We've already got, but we've also got a list of places that want us to come to, and also we've got like a list of volunteers that are waiting to join us. So you know, it's all. We'll get back there. We've got to spend the rest of this year shoring up our existing projects.
Yeah.
Opening up the ones that have patiently waited for us to come. And then the following year, it'll be push again. And
how do you get your funding?
If very, very hard is, you know. I'll speak to another wonderful woman on my podcast, Taban Suresh. Who deals with the Kurds in she done this amazing thing where she got boxing for women to empower them. in the camps out in Iraq, and it's an amazing story. But like she said, it's very difficult because with the pandemic, everything shut down,
and
so, you know, funding levels shut down. So even the big ones struggled. Cancer research was saying, you know, like, you know, we're struggling, and so it's like it filters down. So those pots are very hard to come by. We did get great support from the lottery. We then had a period where it was a bit odd because I think the second time the TV advert come on, at that time we got turned down for some lottery funding, but we was on the telly.
Yeah.
You have to follow these you don't get there's no great thing. And I used to get these people contact me saying, oh, can you get me some money from the lottery? You can't even get yourself any at the moment, you know. Because I mean, we can run without any money, you know. We can run without any money, but it would die out.
Yeah.
The problem is, an engine needs fuel. So it would die out, it would go back to me doing it on the off, which is okay, but it'd be a shame because we've built so much.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's people like, but we've managed to now, once we became a fully registered charity, then that was a hard thing to get. But once we got it, it meant people like L'Oreal are now our sponsor because
they can
only really sponsor registered charities. So
even
though we were quite almost as big with being a community group, it's that registration that's small. I'd say to anyone, it's worth the effort. People are running like this to go, you know, see it through. It's a hard process, but see it through, because once you get that registration, you then get taken seriously for things like, even if someone wants to run the marathon for you, you can be registered under Virgin Giving. That stuff, it opens up doors. So we've now got two main sponsors. We've got L'Oreal, who sponsor us, and we've got Zenoti, which is an American software company for the industry. Because it tends to be industry-based, you know.
Yeah.
We are hairdressing. So
we're a good
fit for that. And what's interesting is I had an idea about corporate sponsorship. I felt that maybe it was just an advertising thing.
Yeah. You
know? Which I thought, you know, fair enough. It's okay.
Yes.
As long as my guys get the benefit of it, I don't really care. But it wasn't like that. L'Oreal have supported us so much with, they've made videos for us to send out to our volunteers. They've supported us. They've done campaigns. So it's not just writing a check, it's really getting the backup from a company like that.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Also, what they did, they said, I thought it'd be, well, L'Oreal, you know, they said, look, you need to get more sponsors. So, you know, that they're open for, openly encouraging us to get maybe other big brands involved.
Yeah. So
the Wellers, if you're listening, the Wellers. You know, they're cool.
Yeah.
In a multi agency type thing, because we're all in the same, which I was not pleasantly surprised about. And Zenoti, who sponsored Haircuts From Us, actually sponsored the podcast.
Oh.
So, you know, I've got my first corporate sponsor for the
brilliant podcast.
But I did set it up that it all funnels back into Haircuts for Homeless, so that goes back to that. So, you know, any sponsors for you know, you can write it up against your tax, bless you.
Yeah, exactly.
Charity.
So what's two questions. Are you still working? Are you still freelance hairdressing then?
No, not really. I've got a few people I do of a Saturday. you know, I've known people for 30 years, you know, so I still do Pip's mum.
Yeah.
But what it is, once we become a registered charity, we had trustees put in place, so then me and my sister then can work for the charity. So
you get a wage.
It's a full-time commitment now.
Yeah.
I mean, we've been able to deliver on a bigger basis, but also it means we can devote the time for the other stuff, which is more fundraising, which is more, you know, we're trying to get long-term sponsorship.
Yeah.
Because the thing with sponsorship, as any other people running something like this, sometimes it's you get an amount for a year, but it has to go in that year.
You
can't really plan anything for growth for 2 or 3 years, because as we come out of pandemic, you need to grow and you need to look for forward. But if you've only got like a budget for that year, you can't really, you know.
Yeah.
Long-term sponsorship is really crucial for small charities as well.
Yeah. So what's the, do you go to every single one, or do you have people that run them for you?
Right. Well, initially it was, I run all the first ones. I run them all.
Yeah.
Pretty quickly, I realised it was going to grow out. So the model then became that we had team leaders.
Yep.
So when we go to Birmingham, I've got Jane DeFrancesco. She loves Birmingham.
Yeah.
She is a hairdresser in Birmingham. So that's her project.
Yeah.
So we're all under one family, one umbrella. Yeah. But it's crucial that we have the right team leaders with the right motivation. And someone like Jane, she sprang to mind because Jane was already out work doing street homeless stuff. She was doing the mission work, you know. So then she tied it up with the hair. She saw what we did.
And then
this is what's happening. We're getting people under our umbrella, but they take ownership. So. Yeah. You know, Annabelle in Croydon. Annabelle loves Croydon. She could work for Croydon Tourist Board because she loves Croydon. She's a hairdresser. So do you see what I mean? So that's her thing. You know, Hetty in Milton Keynes. She like takes the council on constantly because they don't do enough. You know, like I'm so blessed to know all these people. You know, Diane in Glasgow, who works with the Salvation Army there. I'm so blessed. Brother Kevin, Dublin, my Dublin lot, they're so naughty. Their WhatsApp group is hilarious. We've got all these WhatsApp groups. Dublin never fails to make me laugh on a daily basis. But we come across Brother Kevin. He's one of my first guests on my podcast. And he set up the Capuchin Day Centre, or he runs it. He's run it since the late 60s. You know, you think you're doing your bit in life until you meet someone who has given their whole life to this. So humble, you know, does such amazing work. So, you know, they feed 800 people a day.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you said to me something earlier, and it struck a chord in me. He explained to me, I forget what we was talking about earlier, but it was about people, like, why they deserve to be helped and judgment. And Brother Kevin taught me a lot about non-judgment.
Yeah.
I was under the impression, or I was you know, ignorant to the fact that, it's when we're talking about people get put in hotels, right? Now, this has been going on a long time in Ireland. Before the pandemic, they were putting people in hotels because it's such a problem there. And I used to think, oh, that's all right, isn't it? Being put in a hotel for a few nights.
Yeah.
He explained to me that often it'll be single, like women that have had to escape. So they're on their own with their kids. They get put in a hotel, but they're not allowed to use any facilities. No, they get a room in a hotel, right? So when it comes to feeding their children, they're still responsible to go and feed their children. So, and it was, he said that often the smells come up from the kitchen. Look, you know, it's like you've got children, to keep them in one room, not in your house, in one room, it's not, it sounds glamorous, but it's not, you know.
Yeah.
And be able to then go into the lobby or go to the dining area, or, you know, then to have to walk across town to the Capuchin Centre to queue outside to then go in and get some food. I quickly realised that I'd been so like wrong thinking that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's a touch. It's not a touch.
Yeah.
And also another time he said to me that, he's such a wonderful man he is. He said to me, he was looking outside the window and he saw a woman pull up in a car. And she came over to queue up and get some food. I think she may have had the kids with her, but, and he said to her, I think if you've got a car, you may be able to, maybe you don't need our service.
Yeah.
If you can, she said, will you come with me? And he followed her over to the car. And she said she was living in her car because it wasn't safe for her to live at home anymore. So that car was her home.
Yeah.
And the children, you know, and he said from that day on, he's never, ever questioned anyone. And the Catholic is, if you're hungry, we will feed you.
Yeah.
And there's so many of us, including myself in the past, have made judgments on people. There's all this talk about people going to food banks, don't need it, all this stuff. Put the judgments aside.
Yeah.
And take it for granted that the majority of people will need. And he said it would never, ever make anyone feel bad about themselves again.
I honestly don't think that anyone would go to a food bank or queue for food unless they had to. Because why would you?
Look, maybe. Mate, let's go back to...
There might be a few people, but I think on the whole...
However, yeah. I've had people I've wanted to punch when I've cut their hair in the homeless centre, right? I'm not an angel.
Yeah.
They've been ungrateful. They've been grumpy.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I thought, what the fuck am I doing? It's my day off. All right, it's my job now. For 5 years, it was slipping around on my day off, with other life things going on. So, and at that point, I was like, what am I doing? But the next person would be a lady who's had an awful life, who is on the verge of tears when you show them the mirror of how the difference it makes.
Yeah.
A big hug, you know. And you think, oh, that's one, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You've got to do it for the majority. You've got to do it for your core. Yeah. That passion, it's all about core, the core of what you're doing something, the why. It's all about the why. So, so you cannot let the small bits, because they're the things, isn't it funny? They're the things it take, you know, in whatever field, I'll take it back to hairdressing. You do 60 clients in a week, right? 58 of them would be wonderful. One would be a bit non, but one would be an absolute pain in the ass.
Right? Yeah.
Who do you think about when you go to bed at night?
Yeah.
You don't think about the 50. We take these people to bed with us.
Yeah, yeah.
It's mad. You know, if you're a nurse, you get one patient, you know. You know, you've got a wonderful patient. You get that one patient who's been horrible.
Yeah.
And why don't you take to bed with you? You know, so it's just a matter of filtering that stuff out.
Yeah. But it's being aware of that, and then you can kind of start dealing with it, you know.
Yeah.
Just being aware that you don't have to think about the shit stuff.
No. No, and that's all part. I mean, I learned a lot of this stuff all in recovery. I learned that, this is all. These are.
What
all
did you do? The 12 steps.
Yeah, I did. I went in. Went to AA. Done the 12 steps, and you know, and it's a massive learning curve.
How long did it take you?
44 years. 44 years to get in the first meeting. I was really fucking good at drinking and taking drugs by that point, and that's why I'm an authority. That's why I'm really helping people, because I know what I'm talking about.
But
it takes different things for different people. It depends on who's it's that old thing of you know, how your mum teaches you to cook Sunday dinner. You know, it depends who your mum is for how you cook it, and a bit like that. With it's not a, you know, it's not an organisation that's got, you know, guidelines. It's a matter of who taught him, who taught you,
yeah,
and there it goes, you know.
Yeah,
I had someone who took me through fairly quickly. I had someone who was quite, who still is quite, no nonsense.
Which yeah.
Because I was used to manipulating. Thing with us, I do that.
Yeah.
I do that because we get people round our little finger, you know.
Yeah. Like
us alcoholics are manipulators, you know. It's what we're good at doing. So I'd had years of counsellors. I could manipulate them, you know. I was abused as I was a child, you know. But I used to use that as a tool, you know. I could get you feeling sorry for me within minutes.
Yeah.
It's an odd thing. Until you let go of that stuff, it still rules your life.
Yeah.
But not always as a victim. Sometimes you use it to your advantage, you know. Like, no wonder he drinks, bless him.
Yeah, wild.
No wonder he takes drugs. No wonder he's philandering, whatever, because it's an excuse.
Yeah.
I don't have to take responsibility.
Yeah.
If what happened to me when I was a kid means I do a certain thing now, it's not my fault. So I don't have to take, and I don't want to take responsibility. See, I want to run away and take drugs, and, you know, I want to hide from all that stuff.
Yeah.
So they're crucial things you learn when you're going to recovery. And how you keep that going is by helping other people.
Yeah.
And that's why I resonate so much with, I walk into a homeless centre, and maybe that authenticity I've got is why I connect with a guy, you know, struggling.
Yeah.
Because maybe he just sees it in my eyes.
Yeah.
Maybe he sees that struggle in my eyes, I don't know. But I think that's why I'm able to do what I do, I think.
Yeah. I think you do need to have kind of been there or lived through some of that to connect with people. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Because you just don't get it unless you have. Do you still go to meetings?
Unfortunately, I think it's terrible what's happened the last year or so. Because they've shut the meetings.
Oh, fuck! Of course they've shut all the meetings, haven't they?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What have people done?
They've drunk.
God, I didn't even think about that.
They've struggled. They've drunk.
Fucking hell.
Bless you. Look at your face. Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. God, they're so... Oh, my God.
I don't get. This is what I don't get about what's happened over the last year, that the church is closed. You know, I don't go to church, but I can imagine it's a real, you know, necessity for people who rely on that. You know, AA meetings had to close, you know, NA meetings, and all of this stuff that I would think, it was almost, I think they sort of opened the pubs before they opened the churches. You know, and you think, what sort of fucked up thinking is this? At least open them at the same fucking time, you know. And I know there's a safety issue. Look, I got no, please don't anyone think I know what I'm talking about, because I don't. But there's some logical things there that I think people need, you know. There's been, you know, a lot of the meetings went on to Zoom meetings, stuff like that, but particularly with what we have and what we do, there's a necessity for contact.
Yeah.
You know, maybe not physical, but like the vibrations you get in a room of people, you know,
that
you don't get on a Zoom meeting.
And people feel really uncomfortable on Zoom as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's just the practicality of actually being somewhere, but it's actually some people just don't want to.
It's the human thing. There's a thing about something that happens when people meet, something that happens in the air between the people, the vibrations between people, the
energy,
all of that stuff. You know, that stuff is real and tangible. It has an effect that you don't get. You're not ever going to get. This is why this stuff can't replace. It can be a healthy alternative to a degree, but, you know, we need people.
Yes. Yeah.
And we need to get back to that as soon as it's safe
and
healthy. You know, I'm not saying run out and it should be.
Yeah.
It's been challenges. I ain't got
that. Yeah.
But, I know people have struggled through it.
God, yeah. I didn't even think about that. People go to meetings every day, don't they?
I do, yeah.
Fucking hell. Yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. We didn't need to. You know, this is
the
thing.
Yeah,
this is what people, when I start talking about homelessness and some of the issues, people don't think of it because they don't need to. And that's not a criticism of anyone. It's only, I mean, I didn't need to. I didn't, till that day I went into that, to the Salvation Army and cut some people's eye and actually talked to the guys and talked to them and heard the things. And over the years, I've learned about homelessness. I've learned about drug addiction. I've learned about mental health. I've learned about domestic abuse. I've learned about modern day slavery, you know, incest. You know, I've learned about so many things, you know.
Yeah.
I need to know about now. I didn't need to know before, you know, but I'm richer for it now because I've learned a lot more about the human condition. You know, it's important. It's important stuff. It's important. If I've got kids and I've got grandchildren and I want to leave a legacy to make reason of being in this fucking world, I have to learn, you know, and then you've got a chance.
Yeah. You
know? Chance to maybe change. Yeah, the hardest thing to do is to change yourself, you know. Like I can't change you, I can't change the government, I can't change, you know, anything out there. The only thing I can change is this, is it there and what's in here, you know.
Yeah.
And then that way I can make a change, you know, in a small
way. We are doing an amazing job. I can't say anything about sounding sarcastic. You are doing an amazing job, though. I mean, thank God for people like you that are really making a difference. No, but it's true, though. So what? How do people get in touch with you if they want to help?
Our best way is email us.
Yeah.
It is info@haircutsforhomeless.com.
So are you in every city? Or are there places you're not?
We're getting there, but I think we're going to have to reconnect with. I think there'll be ones that have, you know, this has been catastrophic to the economy,
to
things in general. So
yes,
including homeless centres. Some won't have opened again.
Yeah,
so we are going to have to rebuild. So we're going to need, we've got the rest of my life to do.
Yeah. Yeah.
No rush, you know.
Yeah.
We'll make sure that everyone's okay where we're already established. If we've lost, say, Bristol or, you know, Cardiff, we'll get it going again.
Yeah.
Maybe somewhere else, maybe a different team, but we'll re-establish those places. And then there's so much more scope, you know.
Yeah.
Every you know, when we're in... you know, if we're in Brighton, we can then go to the next one along. We can then go to the next one along.
Yeah.
We're established, but we, you know, we won't stop still.
And how can people donate if they just want to donate some money to you? Do you have...
They can do it in several ways. But our website, haircutsforhomeless.com, you know, you probably put the links on, but it's got the link on there. But yeah, they can, you know, people can do what they like, you know, they can donate a little, like, you know, it's whatever people's, you know, they can put a little bit in. Some people do like a monthly thing if they want to do that, you know, so sometimes a little bit a month actually is really, it's good because it's that established thing.
Yes, yeah.
Or sometimes they could just tell people what they know about it. You know, or if they work in a big corporation, they can then put it to the attention of the people who can say, look, you know, but we don't want to take away from any other charities, but, you know, but we get a lot done for the, you know, we get an awful lot done for us.
Yeah.
Really. Yeah.
Oh, lovely. Oh, thank you so much. I really enjoyed that. And I'm gonna, I did. I'm not that I'm surprised that I did. I thought it'd be boring. Shit. I was like to Stu Whiffin yesterday, and I told him, and he was like, "Oh, he's wicked. He's a right lovely guy." And I was like, "Oh, thank God for that." What was I going to say? Oh, I'm going to listen to your podcast episodes that you said, and I'll share. I will share everything, obviously.
Yeah.
But thank you so much.
The ones to look out for, like Brother Kevin, Capuchin's early episode, and recently Jody Keegan's the survivor. I want to see the Taban Suresh.
Yes.
Yeah, Taban. Really are people that you probably have to get on at some point. You know. Yeah, they're amazing people, and their stories need to be told.
Yeah.
But enjoy that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, hi, thank you.
No, you hang up.
Isn't it lovely when you listen to amazing people doing amazing things? It just makes you feel all nice and warm and cuddly, doesn't it, inside? What a lovely guy. And yeah, that really, there's certain things, obviously, with the pandemic and life in general, if they don't affect you or you don't experience them firsthand, you just have no idea. They just don't enter your headspace, or, you know, you've got no idea what people go through. But that thing about the meetings closing, like for addicts, I didn't even think about that. And I can't imagine how hard that must have been for those people going through addiction, trying to stop it, and having that lifeline taken away from them. Because I know from personal experience with, not me personally, but very close friends and family members have been through that, and those meetings, I don't know how they would have coped without them. So yeah, there's a lot of people that are going to have suffered that you wouldn't even think about. Anyway, I'm going to share the links to the charity if you want to donate. Going forward, if you've got a story you want to share with me, or if there's anyone you'd like to hear me talk to, I've got conversations coming up with a Grammy award-winning songwriter. A couple of idiots that I know have said they'll come on and tell me about their lives. There's going to be a whole mix of people, because it's not just a parenting podcast now. It's interesting conversations with interesting people that I think are interesting, and hopefully you will too. Otherwise you won't listen to the podcast anymore, will you? Anyway, you enjoy your Sunday, and I'll see you next week. Take care. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.